Welcome to Smutty Scriptures, the podcast where three best friends gather together to explore the holy texts of fantasy romance novels. I'm Head Priest Blue Cromwell, and I am joined by my sisters in sin, Cuttlefish and Purple Space Cat, to tell you all about our thoughts on this episode's sacred text. This is actually a reread. We are going through A Court of Thorn and Roses. This is book one. I want to give a preemptive warning for spoilers because we have read through this entire series just before making the podcast, actually, and we're coming up on our one-year anniversary, which is insane. So in honor of that, we are going through the series that started it all with, our first ACOTAR book.
Whoop!
What's the reread
also,
like?
It's also thorns, plural.
Oh my goodness. What's the reread like for you guys? Better, worse, the same as the first time?
Well, it's never going to be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I opted for a completely different experience. The first time I read it, and then the second and the third times I read it, because I don't have a life, that was on the book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This last time, I was time constrained. So I listened to it, but I didn't just listen to like regular audiobook. I did the whole dramatized one.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to it at like 1.2 times speed or something like that.
What was that like? Like, as far as a different experience?
I have some thoughts.
Okay.
It's,
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but also, what the fuck? No. So sometimes they make it the sounds, and they make it the sounds good. It's like, yes. Yes, tickles the brain. That's exactly what it sounded like in my brain hole when I read it the first several hundred times. Yes, yes, mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Crunching through the snow, win. Absolute win. Check mark. Why, when they're walking on marble, does it sound like they're walking on water? No. That mm-hmm. is so distracting. Because I was like, stuff's happening. It's important. She's throwing a shoe at him. Like, yeah. But like, why does it sound like she's walking through water?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any sense. And I tried different headphones, tried listening on different things, on the computer versus phone. It didn't change anything.
Okay.
So sometimes it's great. Also, did you know winnowing has a noise?
I imagine it's a whooshing sound.
There was
it's sort of like
about it.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Oh, I hate it.
What the fuck? Is this like Disney had a weird crossover with Futurama? No, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
No. Mm-mm. You could have had like an easy step into like a spooky noise and you just got weird with it. And I don't get it.
Sure. What about the bulk of the book itself? Like, as far as that experience, do you feel like you remembered a lot, like going through it? Was there stuff that was like different, like hearing it aloud? Like, did it change your perception of like the scenes? Like,
well, it was really difficult to tell the difference between Feyre talking, like dialogue, and Feyre inner monologue.
Mm.
Usually people would do when they have like an aside or internal conflict questions or whatever, they would have either it's italicized or it's not punctuated like dialogue, or even if it's like actors, they alter the way it sounds very slightly so you can compare and it sounds different. It didn't do that. But I was like, wait, did she say, was that an inside thought or was that I don't remember.
Sure.
And her voice gets really grating at like hour three.
Sure.
How long is that audiobook from start
to
finish?
10 hours, right?
Yeah, it's long.
What about you, Cuddle? Mm-hmm. I'm excited to hear your thoughts. When we first brought out this idea of rereading it, you said something along the lines of, it's like seeing an old friend. And I love that. Did it live up to that? Nostalgia, those feelings?
Well, I'll never get my shock of all the things I remember when I was reading it the first time and I was like messaging you guys through the whole thing and just like, what? And then all the questions that were left unanswered and the panic that made that.
Yeah.
And just kind of knowing it's a very different experience. But it allows you, I think, to look at things from a different point of view. Like, I hate to say this because I know so many people are going to disagree, but I have always been in the camp of like Tamlin needs a recovery of some way.
Well, I agree. Redemption arc for my guy.
No, scorched
earth. And when you reread it, especially like even in the beginning, or when he's talking to her, and you can tell he's in pain and that he's going through it and that he doesn't really know what to do. And he's just really sad. And
yeah.
He's like, I got to figure out how to love this person who fucking killed my friend mm-hmm. after I sent him out to get murdered, and the guilt that probably eats him alive and stuff. And it kind of makes me look at like a devil's advocate kind of deal with a lot of the plot points. And I think it gives us a better picture as to what's actually going on, because Feyre is unreliable as fuck.
Yeah, that part is interesting now going through, because we've read all of ACOTAR and we've read all of Throne of Glass even, and obviously we're just about, you know, we're starting into Crescent City here. But yeah, it gives you such like an idea of the world, because I would say the same thing. I thought about Tamlin in a very different way going through this book compared to the first time you read it, especially like we were going into it like basically new readers, like people who either didn't have a reading passion before or who had it in the past and kind of abandoned it. And then we came together in this book, and it's like this like Beauty and the Beast retelling, and it's romantic and the fantasy world and this and Tamlin, oh my God. And Feyre, you have no choice but to think of her as a reliable narrator, because she's all you have. And you don't even read enough to know a non-reliable narrator. Like, you have no concept of this yet, really. So going through it was very different. One thing I really loved was that part of the experience. I guess seeing how young Feyre really is and her thought processes and her acceptance of some problematic things. You know, I'm not going to say Tamlin's never fucking done anything wrong, but of course. Oh, yeah.
That man is a walking red flag.
Listen, gone through just as there's a lot of things. Every man in the Sarah J. Maas universe is going to go through some shit at various times.
You can't justify being a walking red flag with hurt people. That's not going to work out.
It's not about justification. Mm-hmm. It's about seeking to understand before you criticize.
Yeah. And it's also, hey, these characters have done wrong or suffered through trauma and live through their own hell. Is no one possible to have a redemption arc? Is no one capable of change? And right. I think that's just not right.
I do empathize, and I think he needs to be thrown off a cliff.
Yeah. Well, that's not going to happen. He is going to get a redemption arc. At some point, he is going to get one. I truly do believe that, as far as like Sarah J. Maas is concerned. One thing I really like, though, because we do see Tamlin as this hurt person who has lived through a lot of traumas. And you know, Under the Mountain is no good for fucking anybody at all, ever. Yeah. So that just, you know, makes the problem so much worse. But what I really liked was a commentary, and I forgot to pin the exact page here, but Tamlin was discussing, you know, his views on fairy history, right, of enslaving humans, and how he would always fight like for that freedom and be that person. And Feyre has this thought, and she questions for a second how selfish she is, and how she would be like, as long as my family is okay, I would not step into a situation to fight for this kind of like moral view, which is a very interesting thought for Feyre to have in the first place. But I loved it because,
especially later, Feyre.
Right. Because Tamlin's always presented himself as like, you know, obviously he was not a good partner to Feyre at all, you know, going beyond this book especially. But as far as like his innate want to do good, and her doubting that, even though like seeing that side of him and like questioning that selfishness within herself is just, it was spicy. It was good. I was like, I forgot Tamlin's got a heart in there. Like, he fucks up relationships a lot, but he has a very strong moral core
that he completely abandons.
No, I disagree completely.
I disagree also, because, you know, he never wanted or expected to become the High Lord. You know, he that whole thing kind of smacked him out of nowhere. He thought he was just going to be a warrior, and like that was just going to be his life, and he was just going to fight the good fight and help other people, and like that's, you know, what his life was like. And then everything changed so quickly, and then he's got all these complicated feelings with Rhys going on, and then you throw Amarantha in there, and it's just fucking crazy.
Yeah,
I will say, more and more, I really think that there's a validity to the thought that Tamlin and Amarantha are mates.
Sure.
It definitely...
Did you bring receipts?
No. It's just a feeling. It's just a feeling that I have, and all the interactions and the way that he doesn't... I guess my thing is, when he just sits there and does nothing, mm-hmm. and he just is so vacant, that, yeah, I guess that could be that he's under some kind of influence or whatever. But I also kind of feel like looking for reasons as to why that might be the case. And imagining, after reading the whole series, knowing what we know about mates and the way that Sarah writes everything, it just would make so much sense if he doesn't want to harm her for mm-hmm. that reason.
Like his inability? Yeah, I think it's partially that. I mean, I think you could kind of get around that in the sense of she holds all his power, you know. And really, they only are successful in overthrowing her when Feyre breaks that curse, you know. Like, even Rhys tries preemptively, right? Which we give our man credit for. We love that. But
right.
I don't know. I do feel like it would be interesting because Sarah J. Maas always brings up mates and how sometimes they're not a good pair.
Yeah.
And we have yet to see that. Maybe we'll see it with Elaine and Lucien, but I think there could be an Elaine and Tamlin kind of thing happening. So I don't know about that entirely. But we'll see.
Elaine needs a why choose.
Now, that's my perfect scenario. Why yeah. choose Lucien and Azriel, and then they're together. And then Gwen can go date like Tarkin or something. That's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, he needs a friendo.
She looks like the Little Mermaid. Go send her ass to the summer court. I've had enough. Like, stop fuck Sarah J. Maas, her pliant bones. Don't fucking bring her to the sea. Like, I'm sorry. I've had enough. But it would be nice to actually see that. But we'll see. I almost think, because I do think she's gearing toward her Tamlin redemption arc, that something about like tying him to an evil character, I don't know if she would do it.
Well, it might be also, I feel like it's a good comparison between, like, I feel like where Tamlin's, he's not evil.
Mm-hmm.
He's got some red flags, like Purple said, but he's not an evil guy.
Yeah.
And then you take Amarantha, who I feel like is very much
evil.
Like, evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, sociopath. Yeah.
If you have them next to each other, it's very clear and obvious that Tamlin is not. I feel like Tamlin, he just wants freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's probably where you get all the music and you get the fiddle playing and you get like the, I want to, you know, go run around and watch the sunrise and all that. I feel like all of those pieces are very much like the picnic and stuff. Those are all freedom-y kind of activities
mm-hmm.
that he wants to do. And then when do we see him being an asshole? When he's like doing Lord shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, also was an asshole when, oh wait, that's the next book.
Yeah. It's Sorry. Whenever he has to do all the things that a High Lord needs to do, all of his responsibilities that I feel like weigh so heavily on him. And it's just this counterproductive, you know, or juxtaposition, I suppose, of what he really wants
mm-hmm.
and what he has. I still really think we need to figure out some big pieces that are left out of Tamlin's story.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of big pieces that are gone.
Yeah.
But I really feel like he just... he wants to be released from his role.
Yeah.
What big pieces are you talking about?
Well, his heart.
Why it's made of stone?
Yeah.
The curse.
Well, didn't we also see in Throne of Glass hearts that were made of stone?
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah. It was towards the end and the seaside town when Big Boy was like in a soldier guy, and he like took the heart out or whatever, and it was made of stone. And they were like, "Oh my god,
the Vogue Prince guy."
No, I thought it was Big Man, Big Bad Guy. I forgot now his name, but yeah, I'm like 99% sure it would be when, like, right before the Mycenaean, like when she went to do the temple, taking it back, she saw him in the courtyard.
I don't know.
Everybody's like, "Oh shit, about to go down."
We'll have to dive into the text on that, because I do remember that person being controlled, and I remember the stones. I don't remember a correlation to the heart itself, besides killing the messenger, so to speak. But I don't remember the two of those elements being combined. But I could be very wrong. So we'll pull up the text at some point. So it's definitely possible. But I kind of assume that was more part of the curse, right? Like, he's given this heart of stone because he has to convince someone to love him and this and blah, blah. And them saying, "I love you," even though her heart was full of hate and malice and stone, whatever the fuck, by killing a fairy, yada, yada, yada. Like, I figure that's part of Amarantha's romanticism, I guess.
Fuck Amarantha, man.
Get her out of here, bro. She got me fucked up, bro. Sarah J. Maas knows how to write an evil-ass lady.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Let's talk about sex. So,
oh, okay.
That's a segue.
So I have to tell you, the first time that I read this book, when it came time for Cal and Mai, and she was in the hallway, mm-hmm. and he was like, I was so ready for it. I was like bracing like myself. I was like, oh God, here we go. You got to remember, this is the first book that I have like read in decades. So
was this your first smutty book ever?
If you want to call it that, sure. Feel like I went from this to Den of Vipers, and that's, I mean, I don't know if they're in the same.
Yeah, I don't know if they're the same.
One of these things is not like the other.
But now when I go back and I reread it, it's just like, oh, I was just, it was just wishful thinking. It's so not there.
Yeah.
What, as far as like the tension, or like, or
yeah,
oh, I see,
the tension.
I see.
It was very much all in my mind because I wanted it to happen so badly.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I reread it, I'm knowing also that it's not going to happen. She's like, what was I even reading into? There's no...
There's tension.
So flat.
There's things. It's definitely not like the smut we read now. Like
no.
You get into this and you're like, ooh, oh, shit. And this is like a 1 out of 5 on like the spice.
It really is.
For sure.
Then sometimes I don't even realize I'm in a sex scene until somebody's dick is in somebody's mouth.
Well, that's how they all start. No, I'm just playing. We never get that in books. I actually really wanted Lucien and Feyre together the first time I read this. I was
did.
Lucien's so foxy. And so I love
it. I love their banter. Yeah.
Yes, that's so good. But I was just happy to be back in these books in general, dude. Like, I was so, when we finished reading ACOTAR, or at least before A Court of Silver Flames, I was so sad. I was like emotional over the fact I was like, I'm never going to read a book from Feyre's POV ever again. Like a new book, you know, like I was very emotional. She was like my background on my computer for like 6 months. Like, I was obsessed. I was so sad. So it was cool to go back into it. But now I got a little bit of beef with her, dude. The shit in the cabin with the fucking Nestus, that pissed me off, bro. I was like,
I don't know. All that made me mad at Nesta.
Yeah. Well, maybe mad at both of them. Communicate.
Oh, yeah, they were both being dumb.
Communicate. You're both adults. But I get it a little bit more, too. I mean, Feyre just, like, seeing kind of the pressure she's under. Obviously, that's understood, I think, even from a first-time read. But I guess just her survival instincts. Like, she writes her trauma, Sarah writes her trauma very well, of always assuming things. Like Elaine or Nesta will say something just so... Like, they'll be like, we were concerned for your safety just now. And in Feyre's inner monologue 2 minutes ago... was, they're just looking at me for money. They just want this. They're expecting me to do XYZ. And then they're like, hey, we're actually like really good. Like, they have no intention of whatever thought that Feyre was
right
thinking in advance for them, right? She always has this like survival, this like this element to her way of thinking. And it's like, Feyre, I get you're stressed, but like, bro. Bro,
you're like a 7 and I'm gonna need you at like a 5.
I'm like, I disagree with you, because they never said anything even remotely nice like that. I mean, Elaine, maybe.
What do you mean?
Nessa.
What about the scene with the mercenary where they're like, why the fuck are you talking to her? This shit happened recently in town. We're concerned about you. And Feyre the whole
Nesta
time.
Nesta went to go chase her to find her.
That is true. She said glamour. I don't give a fuck. Where is my sister, Doc? But like, I don't know if that's true. I think Feyre had maybe rightfully so, right? Growing up in this environment and the pressures that were put on her. But she has this mindset where it's very difficult to break out of that mindset of lacking, I suppose. So, of course, even Nesta being like, hey, my shoes are, I can fucking barely walk in these bitches. Like, please, bro. And then Pharaoh's like, you know, I got bigger fish to fry in my brain. So that's just a non-issue. I'm just writing that off before we're like thinking about it. Which, like, right, how are you supposed to hold space for other people mentally and communicate? You're fucking starving, bro. Like, you have other things you have to do. So fair. But I would love, dude, I would, after reading all this series and, like, going through, like, Nesta's POV of, like, Feyre not having pictures of her in the house, not having pictures of their mother, like, this, like, isolation, like, that kind of thing, the shoe thing. It would be really nice to just fucking talk to each other, bro. Please. Please. I don't ask for much.
I hate the misinformation and the miscommunication tropes. They're ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, at least they're not a big plot point. They're just like keys to understanding the other person's like POV, right? So like, that's fine. But
I think it is a big plot point later on in the series. Isn't
sure.
It?
Sure. I mean, for Nesta's arc, I would say, yeah, for sure. And our the audience's perception of Nesta as a different person. Yeah, for sure. But it is interesting. Feyre writes off a little bit about Rhys, too, which is interesting. Because I've referenced this to you guys before, and I was like, remember when he fucking, like was fucking with her bones and shit to get her to agree to the deal?
Yeah.
And y'all were like, no, I fucking don't remember that. And I was like, it's fucking there. This man, he has some problematic things that he fucking, like, that's crazy. She's dying a fever. He could help her for free. And he's like, what if I didn't? And then what if I not only didn't, like, you have this freedom of choice, but what if I also just, like, fucking touch your exposed bone and, like, okay, like, fuck you up a little bit, bro. Damn! Okay,
hold on.
Feyre!
Hold on. I have to come in to Rhys's defense. I have to. I can't not.
That's a big... Okay, let me hear it. Let me hear it.
Ding, ding, ding.
The whole fucking book.
Mm-hmm.
Feyre was given the things that she needed to survive and then turned them down because of pride or stupidity or something else. Or unknowledgeable of the situation. Everyone else other than Feyre knows what's going on. She's the only one that has no fucking clue. And everybody's like, here, eat this food. And she's like, no, you're to poison me. No, bitch, I need you alive. Just fucking eat the food. Look at you, your skin and bones. It's disgusting. Fucking eat the... No, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm really hungry, but I won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what pissed me off about Feyre so fucking much in the beginning. Mm. She was so whiny about it. She would spend like a chapter talking about how horrible everything was and then be given something or offered something that would fix it. And then she was like, no, I can't take it.
Mm. And choose to suffer.
Now, in that situation under the mountain, she's waiting for Lucien, who is unable to get there.
Right.
In a timely fashion. There is no one else. Rhys knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He doesn't know that's his mate at this time.
Right.
He doesn't.
He has some inklings, but not a clear idea.
Correct. And
she's just like a curiosity.
Mm-hmm. He has a mission to get from one point of the story to the next point in the story. And he has to work with this fucking girl who doesn't understand the whole situation, who he can't explain the situation to.
Mm-hmm.
So he feels that he has to manipulate her to further the plot along, or she's going to make some stupid ass decision, like starving herself.
Get everybody
like,
dead.
Refusing to have like...
Mm-hmm.
Like,
so he could not have helped her for free.
Okay. So also.
Okay. Right.
Also. Mm-hmm, so he has to manipulate her into doing it. There's
he could help her
plenty,
for free without her
plenty
consent.
Of ways he could do that. But what did he get out of it? He got time with her.
Mm-hmm.
So you said that he has an inkling, but it's not clear yet.
Yeah.
So if he even kind of sorts of maybe kind of has this idea of like what's going on with her, then he would maybe want to pull her away from Tamlin because maybe that whole thing is not real because of the whole story that she doesn't actually know. And there's all this stuff going on in the world that Feyre doesn't know. And that maybe, just maybe, it's safer with him. That's the way I always took it. Because every time she went to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
She got better. And then it went back to Tamlin. And then it went downhill.
That's the next book.
Yes, I know.
Hear me out, though. Could have helped her for free.
Okay. But what he's getting is time. He's not getting money or anything.
Right. But who helped her without any want of anything in return? Lucien.
Well, that's
bullshit.
Not true.
What do you mean helping her?
Under the mountain?
Helping her with what?
Under the mountain.
Because he wants her to break the fucking spell.
Okay, but
everybody wants something out of her.
I just don't think as a community, as a fandom, that we talk enough about like Rhys doing that. You know? That's not the conversation. Because he doesn't have this, like the Spring Court always like very locked down and into the curse and what they could say or not. But Rhys like very pretty much like openly talks about like everything. Like he's granted special privileges due to his position, I guess I should say. But like
his many positions,
he could have given her some information. He could have. I don't know.
So if you look at it for right now, in this point of the story, whenever he goes in there and her arm is broke, they're not allies. They're not friendly. He don't trust her. She don't trust him. And she is all Team Tamlin.
Yeah.
So if he were to just come in there, because she thinks that he is the scum of the earth. So if he were to come in there all white knight and being like, I will fix it for free, she wouldn't have accepted it. Anyways.
She didn't have to.
She didn't have to.
It's magic.
So if he had
hold that thought for just one second. So you just... She would not have had to accept it because it's magic. You want him to heal her magically without her consent?
Many people in this story use magic without consent on humans. That's well-established lore.
But that does not make it right. And shame on you for taking away Feyre's agency.
What did Rhys do? What? Fucking breaking her arms and shit? Like, fucking...
Well, okay, so Rhys manipulated her.
With pain,
but... She retained her agency to say no.
Even though she had already just made him a shit ton of money. So she's already been helping this guy.
Hold on.
Sorry.
So she would have turned it down. You say that he could have just done it without asking. Okay.
Right.
So let's say in our brains that he did that to her and she couldn't say anything about it. Mm-hmm. So she's just boom healed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now he has completely 180'd his self-portrayal. So he was the scum of the earth, and all of a sudden he did something nice for her for no reason in her mind. That, I think, would have broken her brain and sent her down a whole rabbit hole of what the fuck just happened. And then even if she didn't do that, in his mind... She is still Team Tamlin 100%. And even after this whole debacle, she's still going to be Team Tamlin. So he is just using her as like, yeah, well, I mean, I'll help you. But at the end of the day, you know, forget everything else. It's still going to annoy Tamlin.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to tell Tamlin about it. I need Tamlin to think I'm a bad guy. I don't remember why he is gung-ho on that. Maybe he's just because he's upset he's spaghetti, but... He needs Tamlin to think he's still a bad dude, and him hurting her a little bit will cement that at least a little bit longer. Yeah. And then him doing the deal is the same thing, just slightly booked out, because he was, from what how I read it, he was not actually intending on following through with it and calling in the deal.
Right.
He just wanted to make it because that would be looming on Tamlin's brain all of the time and it would piss him off. And that's what he wanted. He just wanted to fuck with Tamlin.
Mm-hmm. Which is Feyre. And still, at the end of the day, I would take that over Tamlin letting Feyre walk out in the fucking gardens and everyone's fucking glamored and she thinks she's sneaking around and everyone's like, bro.
How cringy.
That made me want to kill myself. Yeah. I was like, oh my God. That's the worst part of the whole book. Like, sure, is Rhys like using his like magical advantage? Maybe, like, yeah, whatever. She's a dumb, illiterate human. Whatever. She's doing she's trying her fucking best, right? Tamlin. She's like, oh, I'm sneaking around. That is so embarrassing. I would not be in the Spring Court anymore. I'd say, I have to pack it up. I have to go. Immediately.
Really, do you guys remember The Emperor's New Groove?
What do you mean by that? Yeah.
The movie, The Emperor's New Groove.
Go on.
You remember when Kronk is going to take Kuzco out, like, and dump the body, and
gives himself his own theme song.
Like,
it's so on the wall, and the guys are walking past, and they're like, "Oh, okay."
Tamlin did her fucking dirty with that, bro.
He did. I remember the first time that I read it, I like had to put the book down and walk away. I was like, "No, oh my god, no!"
I think that's my least favorite part.
I was mortified for her. It's probably one of my least favorite parts in the entire series.
It's pretty bad. Do you have a least favorite cuddle?
I was just trying to think. It's also so hard because, like, I know there's so many worse ones coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I got a big one on my brain and I'm like, nope, that's the other book. Nope, that's the other book.
Is it the cabin with the eye thing? That's a little weird. We'll get to it when we get to it.
Oh, okay. We're going to say.
I was thinking about the exploding and the shielding. And I was like, nope, that's book two. That's book two.
I think, like, the worst thing about it for me isn't, like, a thing. It's more, and I know this has been just a really general theme for me with female main characters. I just cannot stand the whininess.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're traumatized. I know they're like, oh my God, they have to find themselves.
And she's 19. I just
don't have the patience for it. And I think that's why I like Bryce so much.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
she's
God.
Not like that.
I miss Bryce.
I miss her too.
And, you know, I do love later Feyre, but this Feyre, I don't. And every time she starts to whine, I just want to flip forward a few pages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I can't stand it whenever she goes through and she's like, a color that I'll never paint, a thing I'll never capture, even if I try for a million billion years. I'll never be able to bring myself to paint this person that I already painted or that I will be painting later. But
yeah,
we're going to totally forget about those things.
Yeah. In my head, it's so funny to imagine that Feyre is like not a good painter at all. Like that she like sucks at it, dude. Like that she's just like kind of doing her like she's a hobbyist, you know what I mean? Which I know is not accurate. They talk about how good her paintings are and how people's reaction to them. I know, Sarah, I get it. Everyone has their special little talent. Nesta can dance really well. Feyre can paint. Whatever, fine.
And Elaine breathes.
She is gonna be really good at gardening, okay? She is gonna rebuild the Spring Court. She
grows those damn herself.
Yes. But
she never thought enough to have a vegetable patch.
She's really good at seeing. She's a seer, if you will. But yeah, it's my favorite headcanon to imagine that Feyre is like just not very good.
Like, it looks like a first grader did it with crayon. Mm-hmm.
That's what I imagine like the cabin looks like later on.
Yeah. Yes, with the eyes and shit. Oh my God, dude. Yeah. Rhys comes home to his like family cabin. It's been his family for fucking centuries and shit. And he's just like, oh, that's fun.
Like, what did we do here?
You know what?
Oh, look at this.
I will say, like, favorite parts, I'm not even gonna single anything out. I just really like understanding who Rhys is later in the series and like reading him. Like very brief interactions, right? Like, and obviously he's not always making the best choices. He's in a complicated situation. We will give him that. But just imagining, like, all the stuff that we know, like, at the end when he freaks out and Feyre's like, what the fuck was that? Just knowing that he immediately went back and the first thing he sees to people in fucking 50-plus years, well, at that point, 49, 50.
She's my mate.
Yes. My mate. Oh, my God.
He's weeping. Oh, my God. Yes, that hurt me. I was like,
yeah. Oh, I was like, no. No, dude. And then even just the first line he says to her, It's so cute.
There you are.
I was looking for you.
That's so Howl's Moving Castle fucking shit, dude. I love it. It's so romantic. And just like the scenes of like knowing why Feyre's, you know, fucking drawer is painted with the night sky and like,
yeah,
these flashes the two of them have like had of one another and like these instances. Oh my God. I'm a sucker for it. Ooh.
Since you brought that up.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have a thought.
Okay.
Do you think that her and Rhys being mates and all that jazz is in any way tied to or influenced by or whatever the fact that she went swimming in a pool of starlight?
I think that might be why she's attracted to it in the first place, I guess. But I don't think it, because the drawings and the paintings and those images that she would see as to like why she drew it in her drawer, I feel like it was started long before that.
That's a very specific pool, you know. It's not like,
yeah, I do want to know why the fuck it's there. That is an unanswered question. I'm still waiting for Sarah. Why the fuck is that in the Spring Court? Why is that there then?
Of all places, like, what?
Yeah.
Don't you think that Rhys would want to know about that?
Because maybe he does.
That's a very, I mean, I just. Maybe?
I kind of want to think it's like where someone died, like one of Rhys's like family members or something.
Or maybe his mom and
something.
But then they talked about drinking the water.
Yeah.
And how you'll be happy forever. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, what does that mean? What do you mean by that?
And then it just made me think about the kids peeing in the pool.
Ugh, gross.
And I was like, I don't know if I want to drink it.
Yeah, starlight
what
or not.
What kind of filtration system do we got here?
Yeah. I don't blame you.
This is in the middle of the woods.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
What's the nutritional value? I mean,
stars. Not today.
I love that. Thank you.
But yeah, maybe we'll get answers about that later at some point. But yeah, I think
she might have forgot about it.
It's very possible, right? Because she's changed her mind. Like, yeah. You know, the original plan for Nesta was Lucien, which like, and even Sarah's like, they would have torn each other a fucking part. And I'm like, yeah, that bad move, Sarah. So it's like, I mean, not a bad move at the time, but as those characters grew and developed, there's no fucking way. So who knows? She might have like changed her mind and just been like, yeah, it's just there. Tamlin doesn't know. And that's all I got for you. That is all I got.
I do have to say, going back through and reading it also, all of the sexy scenes, I was very underwhelmed.
Yes.
I was just like,
what I was saying.
Do you think you'll feel that way about chapter 55 of the next book?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Fair enough.
Chapter 55 is so much more emotional.
Mm-hmm. I've gone back and read just the chapter a few times for science.
Of course, of course, of course.
Right. That's and fair. Can confirm, cry all of the time.
I do love a one bed in a cabin trope, dude. I love that type of shit. I love it.
I do too. I can't lie. It's good.
That's okay. This is just like a teaser to be like, like her and Tamlin, they do it. And I'm like, oh, cool. Fun. Yippee. And then she's like, but her and Rhys. And I'm like, oh, I love it. I love enemies to lovers. I love it so much.
So as I was listening to it, you know, the whole thing about stay with the High Lord, obviously the Suriel is talking about not Tamlin.
Right, right.
But then she's like, Tamlin, stay with Tamlin, stay with Tamlin. So it gets repeated several times, stay with the High Lord, stay with the High Lord. And then she also throws in a couple of my High Lords in there. The way that I heard all of those lines being said, it sounded like Sarah meant for it to be Tamlin, and then it changed. It's like she got a good idea. It's just like, or because I can't, like, without having annotation, like, I can't. This is the shitty part about listening to the book, is that I can't fucking annotate anything. So right. I can't write a note or tell you which one or why or what connection that I made, because I'm like, it's there, trust me. I don't have this thought for no reason. But the way that it sounded was that it all of a sudden shifted.
So what do you think her explanation was for the night sky in the drawer?
I think it had something to do with the pool of starlight. Mm-hmm. I think it was some little tag that she had in her brain hole that got nixed.
I don't know. I was feeling a Reese vibe. He's the most handsome man I've ever seen.
I know that's what it transformed into, and I love that.
Yeah.
Perfect. Amazing. But after listening to it and hearing like it out loud, not just in my head.
Fair enough.
I feel like because it is so early in the series, I feel like it was another abandoned plot that then we went back and reshaped it into the masterpiece it is.
Well, that's interesting. I figured you guys would pay a lot of attention to the serial this time around because you guys have a very, I mean, dare I say, probably one of your favorite characters overall. At least you guys seem to really
love
him.
I love the serial.
Mm-hmm.
I do, too.
We're besties.
Yeah, R.I.P.
Can I have the serial in my life?
So we can give you riddles? I can give you riddles.
I feel
I'll give you close.
Going back and rereading it, I feel like there was not as many like monstery kind of fairies as I thought there were the first time around.
Yeah.
Which was kind of surprising. There was only like, what, five?
Sure.
But I remember it being like, there were so many everywhere. Oh my God, this world. Mm-hmm. And then, no, it's like, there's like five.
Yeah.
And then, like, the what's the cloud one that they, that
the bog or whatever? Bog.
Yeah. And then it's just, and then it's gone. And like, that's it. That's all that it is in the story. And then it's like, okay. You could have just like left that part out and it would have just been totally fine.
Well, no, that's why Tamlin got hurt.
Yeah, it did kind of force them to be cute.
That's whenever they started their understanding.
But he also could have just come back hurt from, you know, doing
trolling the land.
Trolling, and it would have been fine. it didn't have to change. It didn't change the plot.
Well, why would he have been out in the middle of the night patrolling the lands?
Because there's a plague, a blight on those lands, remember?
Me out my way to stab disease. Bah, 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 bah.
I'll get you, cancer.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I feel like I didn't mind it. I do think things like A Crescent City are so much more fucking diverse compared to like ACOTAR or whatever. But I guess you're reading it through the Feyre's POV, right? She doesn't know. She's like, fairies are fucking nuts. She has all these like very simple ideas about what they are, who they are, what they look like and stuff. So I guess it kind of goes along with, girl, we've seen these before. You have shit to do, okay? You're going to be summoning fucking water wolves later, bro. We have to go. Get through this little, oh my God, everything's so scary. Okay, we get it. The Naga's here. They're doing their thing. Okay, yeah, I get it. Like, you know. So that's fair, you know. I think that's just one of those things that comes with it. Especially when we have, you know, gone through so much of the other universes and seen so much more.
Right. Yeah. 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 Crescent City, just every time you turn around, it's like some new thing. And
otters, for some reason. That's fine.
So cute.
Yeah. Sarah's like, you know what? I need to make canon. I'm putting otters in this bitch.
I feel like it's going to be her favorite animal. Mommy, can you put otters in your books for me, please?
Okay. Sounds good.
Wait, wasn't one of the otters named?
I don't even know.
I don't know either. Now, there was one big bad fairy boy that we heard about but didn't see, and that was the Martax. And
true.
Mm-hmm. I actually would have liked to seen one.
You mean that we heard about it from one of the witches?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, yeah. Was that a Volg? I don't was that one of the things that was in the sewer?
I don't remember.
The Throne of Glass? Remember the there's like seven big bad guys, the Volg dudes in the sewer that she had sent Lorcan to go get?
Oh, Lorcan.
I know.
Sorry. I didn't mean for Lorcan. That. That was inside thought.
Right.
Yeah. Believe me, I miss Broin so much.
Oh my God.
My bird boy. But no, in the sewer, in Throne of Glass, she had him go chase after those like seven dog things, and they were like really big and difficult to kill, but then she killed one. You don't remember? I feel like those might be the same thing.
Maybe.
And I really would have liked to have seen one. I thought the bog was actually pretty scary, though.
Yeah, it was written well. I just meant that, like, it just didn't change the plot at all. That's all. I think I'm just going to be really excited with more of these unanswered questions and, like, connecting everything together when we get into, like, I don't know, three more books, two more books, when we start to really get into, like, the prison and, you know, the Trove and all those things and the past of Prithian and and all the implications that that is. And then also probably Ramiel, where we talk about like how that whole thing happened. I really, really feel like that's where we're going to start to be like,
yeah,
I just don't think there's a whole lot yet, you know, and I'm just thinking like we didn't even meet like hardly any of the crew of the inner circle of the whole world. We've met like what, three people?
Farrah. Farrah vibes for sure.
That's it.
She's like, I know my family and then three guys. That's all I got.
Gross.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And Alice.
That's all I have. I guess that makes sense, right? Because ACOTAR is still ongoing. Like Throne of Glass, you know, it's done. Crescent City, we're so new into the series. There are things we're picking out in other like series, but not like a ton of stuff for future Crescent City books. And now ACOTAR, we're like, okay. So we know we're probably going to get an Elaine book. We know we're going to probably get, like, there's just certain things that are going to happen that, like, I'm sure Sarah's spacing out the plot.
Fuck her.
I know. How dare you, but also I love you so much.
Rip my heart out, Sarah.
I don't know if you guys want to discuss this on the podcast. We can cut this out, but I was just, like, curious if you guys saw it. The Margot Robbie and Sarah J. Maas meeting.
Yeah, I think it was publicity stunt.
Maybe. I'm with the Hulu show dropping and like Margot Robbie saying that she's in her producer era. I'm like, that'd be nice. Because she just did Barbie. So I'm like, she's girl bossing it up. So
I mean, it would be cool. Yeah. I would be for it.
I don't know. I kind of think it needs to be animated.
I'm not against it, but I don't feel it.
Yeah,
like, I would still want to see it live action at the end of the day.
Well, it would be way too much money to make.
Okay, depending how much money you think it's gonna make you.
HBO needs to pick it up.
Yeah. With the commercial success of Barbie, I don't know. I just feel like she's got a lot of pull. So I'm like, she's being a girl's girl. And Sarah is floating around her contract now. She's like, okay, who wants to fucking make this shit? She's been trying. She wants that motherfucking show. She tried with her in a glass. She's like, ACOTAR is gonna happen, Hulu, this, blah, blah, blah. She's still out here fighting the good fight. Trying every day it. For us.
I really would love to see it, but I would need it to be
done
as close to the book as possible.
Big That's not how those work.
Agreement.
I understand.
As close as possible, you know, which is fair. And I think Sarah, you know, she puts things in her book specifically where, like, you know, it can't change around too much, but we'll see.
You know, I'd also be okay with a brand new cast for ACOTAR if they had made it into a TV show. Like, just if every single really person was cast. Unknown.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like Game of Thrones. They need to treat this as, like, the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Game of Thrones got bad.
Yeah, but that's because the books weren't finished. There's a lot happening. Yeah. Sarah, she'll figure her shit out. George R. R. Martin still hasn't finished his books. Where have they been? He's making Elden Ring. Why is he working on a video game? Get back in the fucking house. Write your fucking book.
Plus, they could always do, like, ACOTAR, Crescent City, Throne of Glass, ACOTAR. Like, they could... Yeah, that'd be seasons and seasons and seasons.
I would sign up for it, though. As long as it was produced well and treated with some type of respect, I would be so down. I'd be so fucking down. You know, I'd like to see it. I mean, I get when people say animated, and I would like to see that in the world as well, but we'll see.
Look, all I'm saying is,
where's my video game?
We've got both wonderful animated and live action movies of certain beloved stories. So, you know, like,
it's true.
For example, So. The Airbender shows, you know, like there was just, they had movies with live action. They have shows live action. They have all these things.
Just so good.
I just don't know why they can't do them all.
Just stop.
Sarah, I'm sorry put that shit in this conversation. I'm sorry we even brought that, even brought Avatar up in your in your fucking spiritual presence, okay, in the live action adaptations of that. The show honestly isn't terrible, but it's not great either.
I haven't seen this show. I've been too afraid of it.
It's okay. It's just okay. It's just okay. That's all I have to tell you. Worth a watch.
Yeah, I actually
go in
really
with
like...
no expectations.
Oh, really?
We can talk more about it after. Just to give you like an idea and everything. But yeah.
Okay. No, I did have a character I identified with that was different this time around.
Oh, yeah.
I identify with Alice.
Sure.
And I feel like it's an age thing because now I'm older and I'm like, dear God, shut the fuck up. Or I'm like, what are you even doing? Stop being stupid. But like, I love you, but like, knock it off.
She's got to be a stupid teenager. It's just her, it's Feyre's arc, okay? It's her life.
I know, but like, I just, that resonates so hard.
I feel like at times Lucien.
Sure.
Just like that,
I would agree.
That sassy, sarcastic, you know. Yeah.
You're sassy and sarcastic. I'm done. Blue?
Good. I am cool and mysterious, of course. We gotta go with Racy Boo. No, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like actually identified with is probably more difficult. I mean, in my heart of heart, because I'm biased and I've gone through so many of the books now, I don't think there's many people that I'll fully identify with in this type of series besides, I mean, I'm a Nesta fanboy through and through. Is she a little shit? Yeah. Is she cruel on purpose? And does she use it as this fucking fuel to stay alive? And is that a problem in and of itself? 100%. But like, especially because when I read these books at first, I was like, that's just a fucking bitch, dude. What the fuck? You're going to do all this shit to Feyre? You're going to say all this shit? You're not going to fucking do this. You're not going to do this. Though, and now I'm going through it and I'm like, oh my God, it's so funny how Feyre is always saying how Nesta and her are like cut from the same cloth and they're so similar in this. And I'm like, maybe you're fucking right, bitch. I don't know. But like going through A Court of Silver Flames now, like going through where I see the series, I just, Nesta will always have that like special place in my heart. I'm a sucker for a redemption story. I'm a sucker for that arc.
Two people, one bed.
I'm a sucker for that. Love that for me.
Enemies to lovers.
Love that too.
We could just build a book for Blue.
That's what this series is.
Boy, it's really
going to
throw you for a loop when Sarah makes you fall in love with Tamlin then.
Yeah, you're going to be pissed. You're going to be mad as hell. But it'll probably happen. We'll see. But yeah, I'm very interested in Elaine's character, and I think there could be some interesting connections. But yeah, I'm such a Nesta fanboy, even though in this book, maybe not so much, but just like knowing her, being privy to her inner thoughts later on, you know, gotta pick her, I'd say. I'm Cassian fucking sitting in Valeris twiddling his thumbs right now. Where's Racy Poo? Where is he? Pookie, it's been 49 years.
It's been 86 years.
I do think part of me, and I did not get this the first time around, and it's really only in this small aspect, but I almost relate to Tamlin's phrasing, is how I'll describe it. Like his...
disassociation?
Yes and no. Almost like his... he's always at the crossroads of a decision of wanting to do something and wanting to do something else, like usually based on like tradition or what he's seen his father go through or like yada yada. And then also like responsibility, like freedom and responsibility almost always. And like, I want to save Feyre and do something under the mountain. Will Amarantha make it worse for literally everyone? And then she'll know exactly what forms of torture are going to affect me more. And then is she going to kill more of the Spring Court? Because she's already forcing him to whip Lucy in. Lucy's already been through a fucking enough. Like, Jesus Christ, poor Lucy, bro. Poor fucking... Somebody love this man, Elaine, please, bro. That man... I don't even get me fucking started.
I think Jurian's got that.
Don't subtle. Even get me fucking started. Jurian has been through a lot, too. So much. Weird to watch him as an eye and then know he's there later.
As an eye.
But just like this constant... He always seems stuck. He always seems at this crossroad of almost always choosing inaction for the sake of being afraid of consequences, I guess. And I think that's pretty relatable to the path of my life, at least, as far as this, what you are told, what you should do, what's your natural inclination, what you are put into a position in life to do. And I think that's an interesting dichotomy that exists within Tamlin. You know, I like that part of him, even though it manifests in the story in really negative ways. Right. I don't like that he didn't do anything like Feyre's sitting there. You know, I don't like that. I fucking hate it. But I understand his like anger, frustration, fear of like his entire court, the responsibility. Feyre is the most important thing in the world right now besides Lucien. But like his entire fucking court is here. Like that's a whole thing, like the torture and the deaths he's already witnessed and. Oh, it's just crazy. It's just crazy good. And like,
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, now that you've reread it or re-listened to it, do you think in any small measure that Tamlin at the end of the book actually loves Feyre?
No.
I think, okay, I'm going to go out and say something. I think, yes. However, I think that is his biggest weakness. I think in a sense, he seems so inexperienced with love and again, relationships in general, right?
Affection.
Really anything, right? Like any type of romantic connection, there's this whole shit with Amarantha. What the fuck is happening there? So I do think yes, but I think that idea terrifies him. And I think that's why he is such a bad partner and overprotective and insane in book two. I think that's to his own detriment. I don't think he's ever been able to love something and keep it or see someone keep it or see a healthy relationship, see anything beyond initial mating. I don't think he has any concept of what love is supposed to look like or feel like. And it's to his and Feyre's detriment.
I don't think that you can start a romantic relationship with the goal of falling in love.
Damn.
I don't think
I'll let my husband know.
Oh, God. I don't think you should start off your love story by kidnapping someone from their childhood home as well. I think that's not.
That's great. Also not a good look.
It's no. Not a good start to the power dynamics that are going to exist in this fucking relationship. Yeah.
But I don't think in any way, though, that you could do that because it puts too much pressure.
Sure.
And expectation. I think having romantic interactions with an emotional expectation, because really that happened extremely fast. Not, you know, she was there for months, yes, but their interactions were very small.
Mm-hmm.
They did not have many times to interact meaningfully.
Yes.
So when you take the time and you subtract all the time that he wasn't even fucking there. Mm-hmm. Or like they didn't even interact and mm-hmm. you only look at the pieces where they actually interacted with each other and you look at it through his eyes where he sees this pitiful like bitchy little girl that he has to fall in love with and get to fall in love with him because he starts out flirting in the beginning.
Your hair looks clean.
Yeah, yeah. So I know it's rocky and that's all fun and fine and well. But the point is that he is approaching every interaction with that end goal in mind. Mm-hmm. And that end goal is unshakable. It's not like, well, we tried, it didn't work out. It's not like dating. Mm-hmm. It's like, nope, this happens. Yeah. Otherwise, the world ends.
Yeah, so, the emotional stakes of if we don't fall in love, life is going to get exponentially fucking worse for everyone I've ever known.
Right.
Not great.
So also to know, because of what Alice said after Feyre came back to the house, to the manor, Alice told Feyre that Tamlin needed to have that mortal girl say that she loved him and mean it with all of her heart. They didn't say jack shit about him loving her.
Sure.
So he just needed to manipulate a teenage girl into loving him and thinking that she loved him. That was all that really needed to happen.
So, no,
it's not love.
I think him sending her away, though, is element of that. But go on.
I think there could be different kinds of love.
Sure.
You know, I think is the love that he is described. If we're to end this book very much on Team Tamlin, which I think is the goal.
Sure.
Yeah.
If we are to read this, even like when she dies, when Feyre's back breaks and he's crying and he's begging. Oh, it's his spine. It's his spine.
It's both. She got fucked up.
When he's sitting there begging Amarantha and he's on his knees and all these things, right? I would say that those are pretty desperate. That's pretty desperate sounding. And I would even say that when he whispers it to her and what does it say? Holds his hand over her heart or something. I would say that that's a very, like, I would say, yeah, on page 406, I love you, he whispered and kissed me as he laid his hand on my heart. Tenderly brushed aside my matted hairs, hand glowed bright. But I don't think that it's the same kind of love that Rhys and Feyre have later on.
I will say, though, very different power dynamic, right? Mortal and fairy versus fairy and fairy and power, magical ability, right? Very different playing fields. Not that I love Rhys and Feyre. They're a fucking choice, but he does get to see her on like a different, they get to start off a relationship on a different level.
I agree, but I'm saying at the end, I do think that he loves her, but I don't think that he is in love with her. I think he cares about her. I think he wants her to be happy and all those things. And he is now kind of seeing her as his charge, I suppose. And that's why we have so many of the issues in book two. But I would say that he does to a certain extent. Not enough and definitely not in a healthy way. But I would say that he does.
I would argue it's not love, it's attachment.
Hear me out. I think Tamlin loves Feyre in the way that Kale loves Celaena. Celaena is the type of, you know, she starts off, I mean, you know, she does start off at a different level than Feyre, right? They both have their skills and whatnot, but at the end of the day, Selena's been through more, right? But Celaena falls in love, true. Celaena falls in love with this protector, this person, this blah, 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 like whatever. Feyre falls in love with this protector, this man, this power, this whatever, yada, yada, like loving that like kind of dynamic. Tamlin is overprotective of her, views her as weaker, even when she is not. Kale being surprised Selena's a fucking assassin, and like his overprotectiveness and his like attachment to her, and like it just seems like it followed a very, very like similar arc, I guess I would say, as the two. So that's why I'm more on the side of like it is love, but I don't think either one of them truly knew who the other person was, and they also changed so radically in that amount of time. Right. Mm-hmm. Kale could never love assassin Celaena or ever see the kind of fire that like Aelin as a queen had. Right. He could have never really matched that. He could have never been that. He loved who he thought Celaena was and this idea of her. And I think that's the same thing for Tamlin to Feyre and Feyre to Tamlin in the way that Celaena loved Kale. So I think it is real at that point. But I think they just changed so rapidly. You know,
well, and I think that's okay too, because as relationships are ebbs and flows,
right?
And you know, you can fall in love and you can fall out of love, and that I feel like that's a very real thing,
yeah,
especially in literature. And I feel like just because you love someone does not mean that you're a good match,
right?
So
yeah, I think they might have needed each other for a certain amount of time, and then things, you know, they were not meant to be, so to speak. Same with Kale and Celaena.
I have another controversial thought.
Go ahead.
Feyre is 19.
Right.
She gets turned into Fae. She is high fae at age of 19.
Correct.
Correct. Alice, talking about high fae, says that high fae don't actually mature and are counted as adults until they're about 70 years old.
That's what you're saying.
So Reese is a child predator in the eyes of the fae, because she's only 19 and they consider fae children until they're 70.
Hear me out. She obviously lives through, they're kind of counting like a childhood, right? So I think they get around it by the fact that like fae has reached human adulthood. You know, it's a quicker time period, right? But like at the same time, she did live through that process, I guess I should say. Though it'll always be weird. It'll always be weird.
I mean, she was capital M made.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like that's not a normal circumstance.
You know what? I'm just saying.
It is a valid thing to bring
there's
up.
Some years to go. Mm-hmm. Just saying, maybe they could have waited. Just a little
70
bit.
70 years? Are you kidding me? Feyre has a moment of peace and then she's like, I need a baby. Like, bro, Feyre couldn't even fucking... That pisses me off, too.
Hey, you are so many books ahead.
I know. I just like, Feyre, bro, slow down. She's like, I have forever to live and I need this one thing.
It's all right. You're only going to be, you know, tied to it for 70 years.
Oh, my.
Instead of the original 18.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine?
How long are they in diapers?
Imagine being a fairy and like having this like hundreds of year lifespan and you're only 20 years younger than your mom. That is fucking weird, bro. That is so weird. How old's your dad? 500 plus. Like, fuck. That is weird.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
What is interesting is
they could be like siblings.
Again, we are so far ahead and we're so on top of it. But it does pose some interesting thoughts. Biologically speaking, does that put her and Reese like roughly on the same spot in their life cycle? Because if that's the case, then wouldn't they continue to age at the same pace? Or is Reese going to start being like old looking hundreds of years before Feyre?
He's going to have a wrinkly old person dick.
Oh, God. And like, yeah, a couple hundred years, I guess. Will it matter? Won't they just fucking die before that and then die at the same time? Because they're fucking...
Wouldn't it be even funnier if for whatever weird loophole that Nyx took after the human part of Feyre, and when he was 70, he was an old man.
And they're like, is that your mom? And you're like, yeah, there's like a 20-year difference between us. It's Feyre at like visibly age 25, maybe. Like,
yeah, him at 70.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Sarah, give me a lore Bible. Explain the exact aging. Explain it all to me. I need it.
If only just to, you know, let us know that Reese is not a child predator.
No, he's not a child predator. He's my high lord.
You can call them different names.
That's crazy, bro.
Just don't call him daddy, because that makes it weird.
Oh, no. Oh, Sarah.
That's really gross.
Sarah.
You're hurting me.
She's like, no one will care about the age difference because he's a fairy. Oh, Sarah.
Hey, please. That's a trope that people like.
I know.
Yeah, and so is child.
Oh my God, stop.
You're not technically wrong. But yeah, is a lot. I will just we can get to this much later. I'm just going to say this now because we're on the subject now. It is interesting that like Tamlin's like, he's going to want to wife you up and breed you basically immediately. And then Feyre's like, okay. And? Oh, so he's going to do exactly what we... Like, it's just very different their dynamic later on as far as Tamlin and Feyre go. But at the end of the day, I am a fucking Feyre and Reese stan. Like, I can joke all I want and Feyre's a bad painter and Reese is a fucking wild card. But like, aw, sweeties. I hope everything works out for you guys. Me every fucking time.
Yeah.
Goofies.
I can't wait till the next book.
Yeah, that one's going to be a real treat to reread. I cannot wait
for
that.
Do you guys have any predictions?
I think they're gonna be fucking. I think that cabin gonna have one bed.
Oh my god,
I love it. Thank you, Sarah.
Aliens.
Well, addiction. What I can tell you is Bay of the Day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
it's me.
I have to say that
it's
Bay of the Day goes to Alice.
Yeah,
always. Oh, yeah. It's always gonna go to Alice, and in ACOTAR 1. Because she really was like doing it, you know, and she, Alice was like helpful while also not giving in to Feyre's bullshit. And she was like, yo, I can't tell you. And that's right. Whenever I first read the book, I was like, wait a minute, there's like a hidden plot. What do you mean? Alice, tell me everything. And yeah, so Alice was like, I feel like on the side of the reader.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, she's my bae of the day. I'm looking at you.
I think the real bae of the day was the answer to that fucking poem being love.
Okay, not me actually not knowing what it was the first time, but like that wasn't thinking about it too hard.
Yeah, you're like, impossible. Can't do it.
It's just like Sarah.
Sarah. New challenge. Write a character good at puzzles.
Well, we got Dorian.
Yeah, and then Aileen gets pissed. That is so good. I love that. Though Alice is a great choice for Bay of the Day. We love her. But with that being said, of course, we want to thank you guys for listening. This has been Smutty Scriptures reading A Court of Thorns and Roses. We are going to jump into the next, which is A Court of Mist and Fury, right?
I think so. Yeah. Akamath?
Akatu.
Mm-hmm. Akatu. The sexy one. The blue one. Wait, no, there's another blue one. I don't remember.
It's Akatu.
Akatu. Love to see it.
Whenever Kindle says next book, it's that one.
Incredible. But yeah, so stay tuned for all of that. We also want to let you guys know if you need any more Smutty Scriptures content in your life, which we already know you do. We have an Instagram page. We got TikTok. We got a Patreon. We're posting fun behind the scenes and the occasional extra episode and a lot of fun on there. Some discount codes for the merch as well, which you can also see linked on the Instagram page, which Purple and Cuddle have been working so wonderfully hard at. Incredible designs. We'd love to see it. You can actually get your own Smutty Scriptures merch. We could match. I have a Smutty Scriptures jacket. No big deal. Okay. Buy it for the 1-year anniversary. What the fuck are you doing? But with that being
said. Hashtag amazing.
Exactly. Church is adjourned.
Feyre. I don't know what to say.
Love.
It's love.
The whole time.